Hello, everyone. Welcome to In the Metal. Thank you very much for joining us for another episode of look in behind the scenes of the world of independent watchmaking, where watches are not produced on a production line. They are made by hand with parts that you could barely visible to the naked eye, are handcrafted, polished, finished, and made to absolutely most exacting tolerances imaginable by hand. And it is a profession and a trade and a craft that is, it's centuries old. It's watches, pocket watches first appeared in the 1700s. And to this day, a lot of those fundamentals remain basically unchanged. And so we are approaching, we're doing this now about 3 months, and we've had a fantastic list of guests who have joined us on In the Metal. And so we have, again, tonight we're going to take a different perspective on watchmaking, and we're going to go back to school. And that means that we will be talking to a guy who has gone through the entire processes at the famous Wostep Academy, and been a lecturer and gone to the point that he has now got his own highly regarded watchmaking centre. And so we're going to be joined by Mr. Henry Corpella. So, but to help me ask the questions, and the man who knows pretty much everything, including anthrax covering you two, let's find out what's going on. Oh my God, look at them guns, man. Look at them guns.
I've got might. I'll fix your Rolex. how you doing, Johnny? Everything all right over there?
Everything is good. We are keeping well here. We're enjoying the best day of the summer so far. So that means that everybody quits work early and heads to the pub, except me, because I am very diligent and I.
They're saving the beers for you. Don't worry. So we have someone on tonight that is basically changing the face of the young watchmakers, as far as I'm concerned. I've been following him a long time. We go way back. He'll tell you about that, to our Wostep days, and he's just a pivotal point right now, and we're going to talk about that because his school is run the proper way for breeding independent watchmakers of this and the next generation. Because watchmaking, independence, what I'm doing here, what my friends are doing, a bunch of the other independents we've already had on, we need what he feeds us. It's proper traditional training, but the way Wostep was taught way back when me and Amrik went there is, it's a little bit different. It was to breed watch repairers, of the utmost and highest quality. But the industry has changed now, bringing independence into our own home, as my workshop is here, and the ability to make our own timepieces and make our own art. And that's how his school is run. And it's badass. And if you're even thinking about watchmaking, you've heard me talk about his school a million times. Pretty much every time somebody asks what school to go to, I send them to his school, because it's how other schools should start to follow. But anyway, he's going to come on and he's going to talk about, we're going to talk about how he got where he is. How do you open a school from a dream, right? I mean, where do you get all the machines and tools and all the stuff that he has, which is pretty much the most badass stuff? We all look at his blog, all us watchmakers, and like our tongues are hanging out. Like, dude, Hauser, get a jig bore, blue, yes, I want one. Yeah. You know, he's got it all. So if you're
I've been looking through it, and it's I have so many images, by the way, that I just don't know where to start them tonight. So we're going to run about maybe 10 or 12 images tonight. And I will try, as we're talking, to select some of the best ones interesting ones. How do you describe best? Some of the more interesting ones, look at the machinery, to look at the school,
it's just going to be fascinating. If anyone has just tuned in and doesn't even have the time right this minute, please go on the YouTube later on and follow through. This is, you're talking to, you know, the pinnacle of master watchmaker instructors on our planet. That's who we're about to bring on.
Without a doubt. And to know something, it shows, another thing that In the Metal is doing now, and really it is one of those little signatures, a little strand of DNA that In the Metal is, we are going to every corner of the independent watchmaking world. We are going to see people whose names aren't always known, who are absolutely essential, central to the world of watchmaking. And you can't get more fundamental to someone, to the current generation of watchmakers, than their teacher. And so with that in mind, let us go straight across to La Locla to Mr. Henrik Korpela. Thank you, Henrik, for joining us. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks thanks for having me, actually. It's a big honor.
Great pleasure. Great
pleasure. Hey, Henrik. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Dan.
Good to see you, as always, man.
Yeah, good to see you, too, for the first time, actually, in live. This is really cool.
I can move, I can dodge, I can weave. So let's start off with just a quick background of you as a watchmaker before teacher, and we'll keep it kind of short, because Switzerland's not your home country. So for the few that don't know, if you want to fill us in, your short path of how you got from Sweden to where you are today. Hmm.
Yes, so I went to the Swedish watchmaking school when I was 16. This was back in 1995, and the education was very different from today. It was a three-year education, very kind of academic feel, a lot of theoretical studies and drawing of escapements and so on, and maybe two of the 3 years was almost only micromechanics. And then I got a job even before I actually graduated, because they were in very big need of watchmakers in Sweden at that time. So I got a great job where I learned a lot about after-sales service, restoration, and working with vintage watches, clocks as well. As the education was a clock and watchmaking course. After that, I saved enough money. In fact, I wanted to go to America after my first job, which I stayed 3 years in, 1 year to learn to work there, and 1 year to explore a little bit more, and 1/3 year to give back to the company. Also, you can't stay just 1 year in a company. It's not so nice. So I then, after 3 years, I decided that I had to learn more to go to another country. My idea was to go to America. And I had been following this guy called RGM, Roland Murphy, at that time. And then I wrote a letter and asked if they could hire a watchmaker like me. And they said no. But they really tried. But at that time, they didn't have the possibility with the visa. It was much, much harder. And unfortunately, that didn't work. And my plan to do this was kind of to go first to America and learn the American style watchmaking, and then try to get and do the Swiss watchmaking. But I didn't get in. So then I tried to be a bit bold and, okay, why don't I try just to go to Switzerland? What can happen, you know? So I then tried and I applied. And this was a recommendation I got from RGM. They didn't just let me go. They recommended a company called Ventura, which was stationed in Zurich. So they recommended me to them, and they actually hired me. So with my savings, I went to Zurich and worked for this company called Ventura. That was a very big difference from the Swedish watchmaking, because now I had to make brand new watches. It's not the same as you do restorations. You have to work super, super clean. So it was a great thing to for my education. And also the fact that I had to learn German or I could not keep the job. So that was a very good motivation. Six months in, they tell me, you have to learn German now. Otherwise, we can't keep you. So that was very fast learning of a language, I have to say. And that was very good motivator. And then I saved money because all my life has always been about learning more and more about watchmaking. So I saved the money, and now I have this other secret dream that I had from Sweden. It was to one day in my life to enter the Voste educational center. And then I thought, okay, why not? After 3 years in this company, also I learned the maximum I could. So then I was thinking, why don't I just save up the money, apply for this so-called refresher course, which seemed really impressive, and I got in. So I then entered this refresher course, and that.
What year was that? Do you
remember? This is 1994. And my teacher was Paul Madden. He was the best teacher I probably had. Actually, he was really, really amazing and taught me organization, discipline, and basically changed my life. I think that was
talking. He wasn't the guy that came from Rolex, was he?
I don't think he has any affiliation with Rolex, no.
I think they had a guy. I think when he quit, the next guy was the head of Rolex training at Rolex.
He's a watchmaker from New Zealand, actually. Mm. And not many people know about him, but he was a great influence on me and the way that I think as a teacher. And I took the refresher course, which I thought was just awesome. I could have never imagined how great that course was. And I think he noticed when I was in the course that, this guy, he can also, because I started to kind of teach some other students in the class as well when I was finished with my work to make the whole team go kind of faster and help around a bit. And I think he noticed that. And then at the end of the course, he asked me if I would like to take over later his position to be the next refresher course, because that's how it happens in Voste. It goes from person to person. And of course, my plan was actually a little bit different. When I wanted to go into complication and work for Christoph Clarier. But you cannot say no to Voste. If they say that you will be a suitable teacher, then you just have to do it. It's obvious. And when I was very young, when I was like a teenager, like 13 years old, I was always thinking, at least I will never be a teacher. That's like in the world. Look at this motherfucker. Sorry. In front of me telling all this bullshit all the time. And I'm going to work with my hands only, you know. Life changed everything for me. And then I started to apprentice under Stephen McDonald, which was another great influence on me when it comes to restoration. And he also gave me the complicated course, so I learned a lot about making parts, finishing, and everything that is needed in restoration. And after that, I followed all the rest of the courses in Voste, like the Schaublin turning course, escapement course for teacher, train the trainer, all the courses they had at that time. And at the same time, I was giving the refresher course and the final. And I also designed the chronograph course that they have. It's probably modified by that time, but that was my gift to Voste at that time. And then I ended with the full training course there. And then after I built my own school that we are in right now. That's it.
So what I'm trying to show is pure determination. And sometimes, you know, we have to go out and get what we want. And sometimes the path we are at in our life or in our watchmaking pathway, it keeps moving, and you never know. You didn't know where you would end up on this route, right? You were headed to America, and it just got shifted, and it just so happened, you know, everything aligned up for you. And you fell into WoStep, which I don't know why they call that course the refresher course at all. It's not a refresher. It's full on, full bore. And it really, because I mean, I did a 4-year school here at the Bulova School first. You know, I've been doing this since I'm a child, but to get my paperwork and proper training and all that. And then you got to do, 5-6 years of apprenticeship before WoStep back then would even look at your applications. So to get into that school back then was really special. And there was no internet, right? There's no YouTubes. There's no people showing you how to even put a screw in or take a screw out. So when you arrive there and you walk in, it was culture shock. And for the better, because we're all excited to become a better watchmaker and have that challenge. If that's your drive, for me, it was, you know, I just wanted to work on the most complicated watches on the planet. And like you, get you know, just, that's where we want to. How do we get inside them, right? And properly and be properly trained. And I think for you and I and Carrie and and Sarpaneva and all of us, we were at a pivotal time at that school where Antoine Simonet was in his room and he was coming out with with the stick, you know, like directing everything, right? Because he's back there, you know, drawing up the curriculum, and he had his dream, like, I'm going to make better watchmakers worldwide. This is not just my dream. This school, I got to do something. You know, that man is an incredible human being, and he did it, right? He did it to a certain extent. I mean, he did it. He implemented what was needed at that time. So for you to get where you are today is incredible. And to bring people up to speed, you know, the WoStep school back then is how Enrique runs his school. We got a key. And we can go in after hours, right? It wasn't 9 to 5, 8 to 5, or anything like that. There was a regular. Excuse me. What happened?
Are you okay?
Cut off here.
You okay?
I can see you.
Hello.
You're good.
You're good.
Yeah, I can't see myself. You guys can see me? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm rambling, but I'm kind of excited here. That's right. Because the way me and WoStep was at that time, and both of us went to school at that time, is I think how Enrique is his school is today, and then more. You know, he brings in the independent watchmaking part of things. Anyway, we got a key. We can go in after hours. We got to chase the fastest student in the class. If he's faster than us, right? We can excel. We got to excel to get to him, so we can come in on the weekends. We can come in anytime we want. It's a passion and it's a love. It's really the bottom line here. And that's how you run your school, correct?
Yeah, in a very similar fashion. But I have probably less competition as there was in WoStep at that time. And it was also a very, very different time compared to today. So I guess the difference could be more that, for example, my students, they also start at different times. Mm. So they don't always start at exactly the same time, because I have to also, you know, or my administrator have to fix the visas and the apartment for the student and so on. So it's more individually based. But for the work itself, it is that level and very hard, you can say, very similar to WoStep, but slightly different setup.
Yeah, well, I think it's way different. I think what's very important, what you're doing, is you're utilizing modern day technology in a way that we didn't have before. You know, you have your.
Oh, Dan has gone. And Dan, if you can hear us, just log out and come back in again. That's American communications for you, Henrik, you know. So
what was his question before?
Look, you can't get rid of a bad thing, let me tell you. So
that's the first time that's ever happened.
That's the first time it's happened, absolutely. So
you know, I was getting a few interruptions.
All is good in the hood.
I was getting a few interruptions, so pardon me. But what I'm trying to say is, we're all looking at your school from around the world, and we're so happy because of the birth of independent watchmaking, like what I'm doing here and a lot of my friends are doing, you teach that in your school. Whereas WoStep, it's more of teaching the fundamentals of watchmaking, of traditional watchmaking, to be to come out of there and you know, head into a company, work for Rolex or whatever it may be, just to start to get your skill set down and see a lot of watches on your bench, which is what we all should do. But in addition to that, you've adapted what we all need and this next generation, and that's finishing, you know, showing what finishing should be like and attempting and executing finishing the proper way and having examples of other people's proper finishing within the school walls, having the proper machines and the time, having ICR F1s and everything that we use to do traditional watchmaking if we're going to make our own timepiece, which some students are coming straight out of school with that dream right away and jumping straight in. So at least let's give them, you know, the right tools to do that. And you're teaching it correctly. You're embracing CNC. You're embracing CAD. You're embracing old school and new school, which is what we need as traditional watchmakers to survive, to move forward and press forward our art. Otherwise, we can only make one watch a year, which we wouldn't be able to eat or survive. And that really is the bottom line.
True. What you said, it's pretty much true how I run the school. I don't have a CNC because I don't need to do a production, but many students have studied because they get these programs for free for up to 2 years, like Fusion 360. I learned Inventor. So I'm hoping that some students in the future, well, actually three now went independent and they are doing all these things that we are talking about. And that's actually only a few years after the school. So that's, I'm very, very proud of them actually. And it's three students now of from different years of my school, but they now got to together in Canada. Burke Hall and Taylor is the brand called. But they don't make their own movement. They just finish some part of it because, you know, they have to grow up and get the CNC and everything. But I do teach the students the manual milling machine. You have to first learn the manual milling machine to know what RPM and feed rates you're going to run your CNC, because that's going to be exactly the same. So if you're learning manual milling, you will, of course, later learn the program how to make the CNC. But I don't have it in a CNC in the school. The closest I have is the jig boring machine and a Sierra.
I thought I saw you had an EMCO CNC at one point. No?
No. I never actually had a CNC. But there is one thing that is extremely close to the principle of a CNC machine. It's my pantograph. So I have a Leonhardt pantograph. It's actually for engraving. But you can make templates, physical templates with tracks milled into them. And you can run a sensor in this track and it will reproduce a part, a work part, with a smaller size than your template. So that would be the principle of the CNC machine. But you would have to actually physically make the template before.
Well, I think that a lot of people who are who want to start their own watch brand and become and learn traditional watchmaking, me personally, I think Japan has really brought a lot of that forward. So you talk about the pantograph. I mean, we're all kind of in awe of a few people over there, right? Masahiro Kakuno, he figured out a way to use that machine out of sheer purpose, basically. Right. And love, and you fall in love with the machine sometimes to create. And that machine becomes part of your creation and how it looks, because that's maybe what you're limited to. And he opened the door for that machine. So I'm really glad that you got that in your school. So you got that more recently to train watchmakers, because a CNC machine is extremely expensive. Unless, you know, for me, I built mine at the perfection that we need to do main plates and whatnot. It's just not, it's feasible. The big ones also, what some people don't realize is they suck a lot of electricity. to keep on all the time. I mean, immense bills. So they're really not for the individual independent watchmaker per se. So if you come out of school and you got a pantograph, you can get a hold of an F1, you can get a jig bora and a nice Chablin 70, you're going places, right? With coming out of school, yeah, with determination and some bench time and some bench work. And that's what's so cool about your school. You're not going to find that in the other schools. And you give them free rein towards the end of the courses to make their own timepiece, make their own bridges, right? Based on a 64, 98, and 97 main plate, I'm sure. And take it from there, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's a quite open course, even though that there is a module or a, how can I say, a curriculum that is the minimum that everybody have to pass. Like in every other school, like Mostep, you have intermediate exams and you have to pass all of them to be able to enter the final exam. Everybody have to do that. But apart from that, after the students can choose direction in the school, what they're interested in, whether it is to make their own watch or to go in much deeper into restoration, to learn to make and adapt parts and adjust them to old antique watches. So this is really, really special. And I don't force or require each student to make a school watch. That entirely depends on what their personal interests are, because this is really, really personal. If you like restoration, or if you want to be an independent watchmaker and you want to make some new cool watches with some very, very high finish. And so it's very, very personal the direction people are going. But they have to learn the basics in any case of the milling machine, the pantograph, and all these things so that they can later then choose the direction.
Right, because I know you once said each student is an individual project. And that's really what we are, right? We're human. And what I was trying to say earlier was we actually – especially when you're new to watchmaking and going to school, we really don't know where we want to be. You have that first dream. For me, it was, hey, I just want to get to the most complicated stuff there is. I want to be – at that time, you know, everyone just couldn't get a tourbillon on their wrist like, you know, like they're made nowadays, right? They were very special. I want to work on a tourbillon with a chronograph and a perpetual calendar, and I hope it tells the temperature too. I don't care. I just want to get to – you know. That was like my goal. What company do I got to go to just see these and get in there? Because I'll get there. You know, I mean, I took over a couple planets with my music. I'm surely going to get where I need to go, right? That's just my determination of where I wanted to go. But that shifted. But it shifted to, okay, I got there. My OCD is fulfilled. And that's what makes a great watchmaker, right? Right? We all got OCD beyond OCD. We're all wacky in our own way. So once
it extends beyond watchmakers. Look, I just want to use this opportunity to interrupt here because we had a question about 10 minutes ago, just after we were talking about your own process to get to where you are, from Richard Dawson. So, and we're talking about getting into the profession. 56, that's round about my age. I know, folks, insist. But
you're not too late. You can always do clocks.
No.
I'm kidding.
The oldest student I had, for example, in the Vostep refresher course, I think he was 63 years old. And I think he still works professionally, actually. And the oldest student I had in my own school was 50. And there was I actually read something on LinkedIn. There was a guy who got his master's degree and he was like 89 or something. The age, we have to really put this age thing behind us, but you have to check the eyesight that it's, but then again, we have eyeglass and microscopes, and we should use microscopes more. Even if you have a good eyesight, you should be in the microscope all the time. You know, it's professional. So I don't think it's too late, 56. But there must be, you have to have a passion or a reason to do it, because it's not, it still takes many, many years to get to a decent level and so on. So
how many years does it take, Henrik, to go from a young person or somebody like Richard, who's in his 50s? So you say you've got to put aside a certain chunk of your life to dedicate to learning the fundamentals and perhaps a little bit more to ramp up your skills to like I know Dan, it's been 20 years, Dan, your overnight success in watchmaking is 20 years in the making.
More than that, but more than that. I still don't know anything.
Every day is a learning day.
But that's the fun, right? That's the cool part.
I don't know anything. The thing is that the more you learn, the more you start to realize we don't know anything.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
This knowledge is bigger than the whole universe anyway. It's just impossible. You can never know everything in watchmaking.
You can just study
one subject for the rest of your life.
It's the coolest part of what this is. It is similar to golf, if you like challenges, or music in guitar. You can never be the best. There is no best. Was Hendrix the best? Was this guy best? Was this guy the best? Each guy is unique. And truthfully, that's what we are, unless we're just a machine working in a decompartmentalized production facility in Switzerland. If we're making watches or repairing watches, we all have a touch. We all have a unique traits to us. We're human. But going to school, doing a 3-year school, I think you have a 3,000 or 4,000 hour basic school, right, Enric? And then after that, I would say you should have a good 5 years of bench time. Moving around somewhere, see a lot of different stuff on your bench, and get those challenges.
I agree.
I think you're good from there to start to find your pathways and who you are.
I think if you want to go to WOSTEP or my school or something similar, which is a package of a two-year education package, I think what you do gain is that you get really strong fundamentals in micromechanics. I think it's the most important is to focus on the micromechanics. So my micromechanical program is minimum 1 year. And if somebody wants to do a school watch, it would be another maybe 3 or 4 months. And then the technician course would be 8 months. So I think that if you go to the watchmaking school, professional establishment, you can probably save 10 or 15 years of your life.
Oh,
because then you never have to do these basics again. You don't have to search them on the internet and then do thousands of mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I think a school is there if you want to get instantly ready to start to discover the watchmaking. But now you know that you have strong fundamentals and you won't build up bad habits, because I talk a lot with Mr. Simonen. At least every 2 months I have a meeting with him, and it's a half a day meeting when I'm talking with Mr. Simonen. So I think these strong fundamentals are really, really important.
I think a lot of him rubbed off on you and me, because for me, I went to the Bulova school first, and I went through it very fast, like twice as fast as you're supposed to. So 2 years in, I was already doing chronographs, and that's not even part of their course. They don't even offer it. And that's why they started calling WOSTEP to let them know I would like to go over there way back then. But when you land in Switzerland, like you did and I did, you realize whatever we learned before, we didn't learn anything. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's not learn over, but we're like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. This is a trip. This is your, because you live in it, right? Everything's around the corner. Whatever we need is around the corner. The supplies are around the corner. The experts are around the corner. Everything is there. And I think that's, if you're really serious about this, that's where you need to head to. You need to head to your school. And then that's where I send everybody.
Thanks a lot. I'm a kind of niche school. I take 4 to 6 students, and I do this with great passion, and I'm totally independent. I don't know any other school which have such a level of freedom and at the same time have a WOSTEP trained teacher with a background in subcontracting and finishing work for the Swiss watch industry here. So, and with a great background that I got from the Swedish watchmaking school, that was awesome in my time as well, but in a much, much different way. It wasn't very efficient with the time, like WOSTEP was ridiculous how efficient it actually was. And I took a lot of inspiration from that as well. The efficiency of the Swiss watchmaking school was that.
Yeah, like sitting in escapement class with Antoine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like who did that before that? You know, it's incredible what he's done for our industry.
Mr. Simonen. I had Paul in the refresher course, but I had Mr. Simonen in the train the trainer course. That was the only chance I got time with Mr. Simonen. And the rest have just been me speaking privately to him.
That's kind of like what I was getting at before. So what happened to me at Bulova, it's the same kind of thing at WoStep, where I kind of moved fast and then he put me into, you know, hey, you could go into the complication course and do part of this. We have this week, somebody who's the head of all of A. Lang & Son coming in for the chronograph course, which now I find out you're the designer of, because I was at WoStep 98, so that must have been your course. So he came in and then I would hang with him. And I love that. Because I'm a free spirit, you know, of coming from the music world, to conform is not okay in what lives inside of me. So the way you run your school now is very similar to that, to give people freedom, because some of us need that. We're self-driven. And those are the ones that end up being like the wacky watchmakers.
Exactly.
And we can figure out stuff for ourselves, right? That's in the end, that's what it is. And things that teachers say to us stick with us forever. I had a teacher in Bulova that said to me, hey, man, go back to your seat, figure it out yourself. He goes, because later on, it's just going to be you, the bench, and the watch. And the watch is your boss, not me. Go back to your seat, Spence. And it stuck with me for, and the dude's right?
Yeah.
He's right. We're all alone. You got to get a book. You got to figure it out something. Now you can cheat on the internet, find out some stuff. But back then, we didn't have that ability. You had to figure it out at your bench. Amazing.
From
hello, Jordan, by the way.
Hey, Jordan says hi there.
Hi, Jordan.
So, and there's Jay saying he never knew there was something. I guess this is where these great names, so many of them, pass through. And on their way to greatness, as you said, you've three former students who are now in Canada, have set up and they're on their own as well. And they're all going out, departing on their own different journeys. Some will work for big brands, as you say. They'll get the call from Christophe Clary, which is so hard to resist, or Audemars, or any of these big companies. Others will go out and never work for an employer in their lives. They will only be self-employed, independent watchmakers, be that in servicing, be that in maintenance or restoration of historic or antique or vintage watches. It's amazing, like, you know. So I'm speaking of Canada, so
hello Brandon.
Hey guys, thank you for joining us. Thank you. But so we have a question here from Captain Forrest, who's one of our never misses a show, and it's a great question. You can read it for yourself. I'll read it out because for audio for the podcast that I'm supposed to be making. Henrik, of all the things that you teach at your school, are there any topics that are especially popular, bring smiles, or topics that students have problems with and bring tears, heartbreak, and screaming?
Yeah, the tear part I know very well. That would be similar, like actually every classical watchmaking school had, even we had to do this in Sweden. It's to make the so-called pivot gauges. The pivot gauges, and I also upgraded, because when I was learning and doing them in WoStep, the tolerance was half a hundred of a millimeter for the pivot diameter, which is 0.005 millimeter plus minus value. So if your pivot is it's supposed to be, let's say, 0.13 millimeter, you're in the tolerance if you're 0.135 or 0.125. Then you're still within the tolerance. This I later learned also that one of my students, who is now also a teacher in WoStep, he told me that the tolerance was stricter in Patek Philippe restoration and pivotage department. He said it was, I think I remember, 0.3 micron. So 2 micron less. And then what I did was, okay, if it's going to be a measuring tool or pivot gauge, if you're half a hundred out, that's a tremendous big percentage. That's you can't use it as a tool anymore.
Can't use it here.
So, yeah, and also I, when I was learning to turn the pivots to the 5 micron, I also realized, okay, it's harder to do the 3 micron, but I also changed to 0.25. So it's 2.5 micron, the tolerance. But then you need really good micrometers. You can't have what we had back then. You need like Mitutoyo quality that you're checking the tolerance in the morning and in the afternoon, because the temperature in the room is actually changing, and that can be a micron or two off. And if I want to be fair, when I'm checking the pivot gauge diameter, yeah, you know, if it's 1 micron off and I didn't calibrate it before I checked it and the student didn't calibrate it, we are lost with the tolerance. So that one is going to be a grind for the student, and very, very important part of the education to go through this grind, no matter how hard it is, and never, ever give up.
What is the significance of getting that wrong at that stage, Henrik?
Well, you know, we have to make parts in turns, no matter what equipment we have later on. It's just part of restoration. It's part of new watchmaking.
Yeah.
And it's part of pivot making, right? I got to make pivots here for all my pinions and wheels and whatnot. But I think, right, see if you agree with me, Albert, right, that it also teaches what – perfection we truly, really need in what we do to make it operate at the next level, which is the zero tolerance level of error. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Would you be proud of yourself if you can only turn to a functional state? Mm-hmm. When the older watchmakers before you, they just look down on you. You can't turn. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's very, very important, this 2.5 micron. If you had a half a micron now and you're only making a balanced off, you're cheating the customer if your value is under. This balanced off will last less long than one that is on the upper tolerance at 2.5. So you will always want to be at spot on or on the upper tolerance, but you can be slightly under. But if you're half a hundred under on a 0.07 millimeter pivot, what is that? That's a 1/14 part smaller. That means you have taken that time away from the watch, from the client. So you're charging full price, but you're on the lower big tolerance. No, it's not quality anymore.
That's astonishing, isn't it? Really,
think you know, that pain and that suffering, because I think we both know, we used to watch everyone, you know, at WoStep, you know, cursing and throwing stuff. And I quit. Why can't my bully F1 can do this? Why am I cranking this thing? They invented motors already. You know, right? Everyone's exactly. Got the same thing. Exactly. Every class that comes through, they all got the same saying. But what your school teaches and what we've been trained to do, it carries through forever. You know, when I sit down at whatever I have here, my bully or my line in or whatever, or a set of turns, I know what perfection I got to get out of myself from that traditional training and suffering and crying and cursing and throwing stuff and I quit and all that stuff. It just becomes within it. And you know, there's nothing, it's not any different than learning guitar to the level that I had to learn guitar and did. It's the same thing. It's 11 hours, 12 hour days, or short days. It's bleeding fingers on both hands, you know, learning how to pick really fast when no one else ever did, and perfection in my leads. It can't be good enough. It can't be great. It's got to be, I'm going to rip your face off. So it's this, it is true. It's the same. Yep. So it's that same principle. It sticks to you. That art of perfection is really true at our level. And I think, you know, your school is training absolutely the way I was trained, the way you were trained. It's the right way. People that are coming through your school are going to be that the next independence of what I see exploding, right? Independent watchmaking now is watchmaking. We are, you know, it, like in music, we're the thrash metal dudes that came out in the 80s, you know, to change, rewrite the roadmap. It's being rewritten before our eyes right now. And what's cool about your school, because I look at your blog all the time, just so you know. It's not just...
That's amazing.
I want you to know I'm not the only one. A lot of my friends, I want you to know how important that blog is. And I want to touch upon the modern day technology and how you're utilizing it there and embracing it, where other places don't. You know, they don't even know what Instagram is yet. They just put a tweet up. But you've embraced it to a point where we all stare at pictures, be it in whatever we do, whatever. If you're a golfer, you're going to stare at pictures of how the dude has his little thing. His club angled, you know, what is it? That great guy, you know, it's the same thing. We look at your blog like that. You know, we're looking at the students. We're looking at what maybe tools that you found that we don't know about yet. And we're looking, we're looking in the pictures. We're zooming in. And it's a wonderful library, basically.
These are tools that you've actually had made by your
people.
So
if you take a look at these pictures, there are three batches. These are the tools from three students, I think. And some of them look identical. If you look at the left-hand row, you have tripods, but they look a little bit different because there are certain elements on the tripod. I want the students to try to explore different types of shapes and finishes and so on. But then you have the second row with the platforms with the triangular cutout. That has to be exactly machined like that so that they can follow instructions. And so it goes. So there are certain tools that have been chosen by me from my experience that has to be exactly following a certain instruction and dimensions. And then there are more free tools that they can experiment with the design.
Okay. And are these tools that are made by the students? Do they understand?
Yeah, they only get drawings and then they get a set of rules that on this one, you have to hand file the flanks. On this other tool, the flanks must be machined with a manual milling machine. And on that tool, you're totally free to do whatever you want, etc.
Wow.
And of course, I thought that when I decided all these tools with all these concepts that I was thinking about for the 5 years when I was in Vostep, this goes back also with my experience in Switzerland as an independent watchmaker and subcontractor. What could be good skills like straight graining and so on that the students might need if they work for these companies here? And how important are they? And then also the element that you mix in a little bit of the creative freedom on some tools. But you have to have the instruction as well. Mm-hmm. And all the tools are graded up to 100 points. So here you can see this is actually I have to say the pointed nose vise in the middle to the right there in the background. It's one of the nicer tools I ever saw the students do. And she now actually works for a very famous company in her home country, Singapore.
Wow.
A very renowned brand. Oh. And it's I had several students who went to that same brand. They seemed to like it, and that brand seemed to like to hire my students, which I'm, of course, also very happy with. So not all of my students are going to go independent. I'm just kind of trying to make sure that this is also a path, like in music. Sure, you can do industrial music and so on, but then you can have your own original band as well. Mm-hmm. And this is the truth with beer as well. Imagine beer. Before, it was only a few brands in America, right? Mm-hmm. And now there are hundreds. I drink even beers from America, craft beers, and it's just exploding. Yeah. This is exploding everywhere in the world. Maybe in watchmaking, we are a little bit behind everybody else, but we are catching up. I can feel it. Mm-hmm. This is proof. The way we speak here is proof we are on the right track. And the opportunities in the future for those people who want to be independent or work with independents to softly go into it, it's just insane. The diversity in watchmaking today is insane.
See, that's, this is the whole beginning of the show has led up to finally. This is what I wanted to talk about, because you recognize that you're not a school with blinders on and going, no, I just teach. Okay, go. I get you a job next. You know this. You know what's going on. Your hand is on the pulse of what's going on here, and it's really enlightening to me. And that's why me and Johnny are doing these shows. I don't usually step out in front of a box like this. But I feel it very important for the younger generation or anyone at any age who wants to get into independent watchmaking to give them the roadmap and the proper where to go to get school. Because I get those emails all the time. You know, where do I go? I'm in America. Where's the school? You know, and how do I do this? And I see it is exploding. I see Japan with Hajime Osaka. And, you know, they help birth what's going on right now. Everyone's looking at their little Instagrams of what they're doing, and they figured out a way to do it. It gave me inspiration as well to kind of do what I'm doing, to watch someone else build their own CNC machine just to be able to make a main plate more than one a year, basically. They're not real CNC machines like everyone thinks they are. You know, it just enables us to make five or six a year. We still got to stand by the machine and change the tools and build it yourself and take a year of your life to get there, whatever that is. It just enables us to make the main plate, which is the hardest thing to do. Bridges and all that kind of stuff, we still end up making them mainly by hand and pinions and wheels and all that. And now right on, we can find used Shaolin 70s. And rebuild them affordable, somewhat, right? We could imagine that back in 94.
Oh my God, yeah. No, everything has changed. It's changed. It's 1994, that's like 400 years ago, honestly. It's time changes. It's the technology that changes everything this fast. And this only means that the number of opportunities mathematical in the future is just exploding. Mm-hmm. The number of people being created is not gone down yet. I'm sure that there is growth potential for the next 20, 30, 40 years before we would flatline. I'm worried about how much can one single human being do? Because I want to learn everything about watchmaking, but now it's not only that we are doing the classical watchmaking and so on. Everybody, and I appreciate it very much, everybody are doing watchmaking in different ways. There are no rules anymore. You don't even have to go to a school like mine. You can be a fantastic watchmaker, find other ways to become a watchmaker. Mm-hmm. There are no rules. You have to remember that. I'm only looking for example, students who feel that this feels like the right path to go to my school. Some student will feel like, nah, I don't like that approach. I prefer WOSTEP. Some other students will say, no, I prefer to go to AWCI or BHI or the Swedish Watchmaker. So this is highly 100% personal. And I hope that people are just honest to themselves and that they choose that this feels like the right path for me to take. Whether that means to learn everything on your own because you don't like to go to a school, that's fine. Totally, totally fine. Or if you like, I will go to this school.
I totally agree. But what I'm trying to show by speaking with you is the curriculum that you and I went to school under, meaning WOSTEP, and how you've taken it to that next level where someone like me, who's born a rule breaker, who I hate teachers, right? I used to cut out of school all the time to go play my guitar. I mean, I was already playing on stage, you know, every Friday, Saturday, Sunday night when I was like 13. So I'm not, but it works for me. You're kind of, so if you're someone that's watching this and you're thinking, I can't do school, man, I could just get the George Daniels book, do it like Japanese do. Possible.
Possible, but yeah.
But you're going to need some, help. You're not going to be able to make all your pinions and all your wheels and all that stuff yourself because you never really went through a pinion making class on turns. So you're not going to know what's right. Let's just leave it at that, right? But going to your school, you have there's a curriculum to follow, but then you get to break the rules and find your freedom and find your pathway. Yeah. And that's the most beautiful place.
And I have to also emphasize on another thing here. For example, there's one student right now. He's so fast, and I check all the students in the same way. that he has saved something like 6 months of the course. That means he has a lot of time for his school watch. But then there might be students who are not that fast and they are concentrating on other things. So my school, it's for a broad range of people and skills. So if a student starts here, he will end up, you know, here. If a student starts here, he will end up, you know, up here and so on. So I teach individually. I don't teach robots and everybody must be the same, but everybody must pass a standard bar so that we all speak the same language and so on. So it is, you have to accept there are, there is a kind of hierarchy or something of talents. We are all learning at different speed. That does not mean your speed of learning, absolutely, you have to remember, does not mean how successful watchmaker you will be. There is no correlation whatsoever. And that's very important to understand that if you take 10 times longer time to teach, to learn than somebody else, still it's meaningless. But I need to have a certain, there must be a certain minimum speed because of the bar in the school that everybody have to pass. And once they have passed my taster course, which is a one week kind of bench test, and I give the okay, then it's good. Then I feel like this is a good project to start with.
You know, once we're done, I ended up being obviously an instructor as well for a show part and their complication rooms and writing the courses for them. So someone like me, I would not be good sitting at Rolex and with them telling me I have to do 11 movements a day. You know, that doesn't fit my soul. That is good for someone else who has got skills and they maybe want to, you know, work their way up to Daytonas or whatever that may be. Me, I work so slow like a freaking turtle, okay? Because I aim for a perfection that's within me and it's what I do. So I fall more into, I had to get my way to the top of the complications ladder, sitting in the complication rooms in Switzerland where it's, the other dudes, like, they don't even want to work on this crap. It's like, here, Dan, however long it takes you, we know it'll be done correctly. That fits me. That kind of mold fits me, okay? And it fits me here where I can make 4 timepieces a year my way, you know? But we're all different, right? When we come out of school, we're all human, and we have to find our way. Other people might end up like you, falling into teaching. Who knows? There's all kinds of areas in watchmaking, but start, you know, in a traditional school, your school preferably is the one that I recommend to everybody.
Thank you very much.
And I'm not brown-nosing, seriously. I feel your school is doing it the right way. You're sitting there, you're showing them, in addition, you have cameras set up, you're showing them how important it is to utilize Instagram. You have your own magazine. That's a 1980s, 1990s magazine that me and you would have to spend $5,000 for a little teeny ad in, right? They have YouTube. Right? They have their own television station. It's free. Why aren't you using it? If you don't have time, find a friend who will do it. You know, give them 50 bucks. If you have 50 bucks, if not, give them 20 bucks. If not, buy them lunch, whatever it may be. You're teaching them how important that is. That's what's really cool to me. Besides all the equipment you have there that we all drool over, this is the proper equipment that is being used in all my friends' workshops. Your Hauser jig borers, your F1s. I have F1s here and sixes here. Now you have a pantograph machine. And this is what we all, the modern day independent watchmaker, needs to make his own timepiece. If that's his pathway and it's in your school and you're teaching it.
I couldn't agree more, because I think what you said there a few minutes ago about 1994 being like 400 years ago.
It is.
Some of the advances that have happened in techniques, etc., I think in the independent sector, the biggest development has been the internet and how different independent watchmakers have embraced the internet. And I used to despair back in 2006, 2007, when I was looking at these images of, say, for example, Antiqua or something they got there that was just groundbreaking. Could you get a good photograph of it? Not a chance. The website, Perviani's website. I have often said this. Being a great watchmaker does not make you a great marketer. And, you know,
she's right.
Yeah.
Gotta remember, Johnny's been in this as long as us, but he's watched people have the dream and have the skills and then have that taken away, or their company dissolved because they made a bad business move or they don't know how to be a good businessman. Same in music. Yeah. And he keeps telling me these stories that are heart wrenching. You're giving them a good foundation from school of that importance.
Yeah, I mean, I want my students to feel as if they are sitting next to an independent watchmaker, and they are, they are the same. They are working together with me, even though that they don't get a salary. They give me a salary. And then they have to slave work for no purpose.
That's the best.
It's the same. I want to give them that kind of feel that they are in a small, sorry about the clock in the background, that they are in a small setting, like in a small group, a independent company with 5 to 10 employees or whatever. That's the important feeling I want to give them. And I am also working as an independent watchmaking next to them. Mm-hmm. So, but at a different level. But we are doing all the same thing. And they get into that feeling. And at the same time, I notice, the world is changing around me. And if you don't adapt rather immediately, you're dead. You have to immediately adapt. So then I realize now the new thing was Facebook. And something called blogging. And of course, I'm a watchmaker. I want to do the watchmaking and the teaching. That's the only thing I want to do. But if that's all I do, I'm going to be dead as an independent. So I was forced to make myself known in this way. And I am absolutely terrible at it. I have no clue. I just do it because I'm angry and I have to do it to make myself angry when I'm doing it. It's like, why the hell do I have to do this again? Yeah. And it's great for me because it just makes me more and more independent. And then the students take on, as you said, I thought I was learning from the student these things, but it could be right that they see me do it, you know, on my personal Instagram, showing my personal stuff and so on. And then they naturally start to do this.
Yeah.
I think so. Because that has been the great law. I think the internet has made or broken some companies. I think you get companies like, I loved Linda Verdina, were one of the first to come out with a really strong graphic that you couldn't miss if you were looking at it online. And MBNF were to follow, and Urwerk were to follow. And they were the pioneers of really grabbing the digital toolkit that they had at their disposal and using it to leverage their watches. And then
Acrivia, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So that was a pivotal online turning point where he was a younger watchmaker, extraordinary watchmaker, but knew how to utilize Instagram when the Swiss big companies still didn't even know what that word meant. And the right way, very personable. It's showing, like we're doing here tonight, we're human. What's behind the scenes? What are we actually doing? And he kind of set the trend for a lot of us, as well as the guys from Japan. And that birth, where we're at today, at this level.
Rex had grew up in the internet age. The internet existed when he was a child. You know, for us, I discovered the internet. I was dragged kicking and screaming into the internet at age 40, and I knew nothing about computers or about technology or about internet or any of that shit. And so it just shows you've got to learn these things. So
if you don't embrace technology and move forward, you can't fight technology is basically the line you should tell everyone. That was told to me. It's not my line. And that's it. You can't fight it. It will win every single time.
So people seem terribly alienated.
Well, you know what's really hard is we're living in, you know, watchmaking world. We're living in the 1700s, being in a traditional sense, right? We're sitting at a set of turns, right? People don't know what that is. We're literally without a motor turning to make a balance desk the right way. And then at the same time, like we're on a Note 10.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
For a watchmaker, it's a little bit confusing. You know, we don't know what to do.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, but it's. I always thought that the early 2000s were like the steam age of the internet, where really didn't know how to use it.
If we didn't have the internet, right, none of us would really know or be able to see
me.
Let's say Sarpaneva, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. He doesn't really like to do any kind of interviews or anything. He's a quiet kind of guy. But he makes masterpieces, right? Both inside and out, aesthetically. He found his own ways. He's found his own art. To me, that's modern day independent watchmaking. Being truthful to yourself, that's the thrash metal way. You know, it is. Yeah. This is my shit. If you don't like my shit, you know, you can get the.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my motto. It always has been. It seems to work for me. But for not the internet, you know, what would you get? You'd see an ad in a magazine and you'd be like, oh, you know, whatever, cool watch, dude, right? And then you'd be still looking for something very traditional or whatever it may be. But now you really get to see it. You know, you get to see a turn. You get to see who he is as a character. And that's what the collectors want to be a part of in independent watchmaking. It's they have their career. They wish they can be in your school. Pretty much all of them, right? They wish they could quit, you know, their income, get rid of their wife and kids, and take 10 years and go to school and start all over again. So another way to live through that is to learn more about us as who we are as instructors, your pathway. You're also an incredible watchmaker, and so is your brother, badass.
Oh, thanks,
So we've heard of Taj,
Kai.
Kai, sorry.
It's pronounced.
Yeah, we were all following his tourbillon journey too.
Don't
think we're not watching you. One thing. That's the internet. We were all watching. It's not just me.
Exactly.
All my friends were all watching. You know,
all of the pronunciation of Kai there. I almost forgot.
Americans say cash, I think, normally. Because of the Kai.
Kai.
I thought it was Kaj. He was part of the school at one point, and then where is he now?
He sometimes came in to help me with some short classes, because in my school I also it's my plight in life to do the 2-year course and so on, and I feel that's the most important value and gives me big meaning in my life as a watchmaker to do the 2-year. For me, ultimate watchmaking course. But then I want to spice it up a little bit for my students to sometime meet a few weeks per year watchmakers from around the world for a week class. So I also give various types of finishing classes and restoration classes, and even classes for collectors, so that the collectors can be a little bit familiarized with students who are going to be watchmakers as well. And my brother, he then stepped in and teach a certain part how to make, for example, gear train teeth in the Inventor of Fusion 360 program during this week to my long-term students while I'm busy to do the 1-week classes with the watchmakers. So otherwise, I'm the only teacher at the moment here, and I'm not really looking into growing to two teachers yet, maybe for a long time, because I already had one of my older students, but I would need 12 students or something to finance it. It's extremely expensive, unfortunately, to have a school like this in Switzerland if it's not subsidized by anything.
You're totally non-profit, correct?
It's 100 non-profit, and the only one who subsidized the school is me and my administrator. In the beginning, I had big help, but then after a while, I had to become truly independent. And I'm truly independent since many, many years. And even when I got some funding help, they leave me totally independent. So sure, I'm completely independent, and
So this is real, a call of the heart, to do what you're doing, Henrik. Obviously, you make a living out of it. Like, you know, but there's this illusion, isn't there, Dan, that people think that if you're involved in the manufacture of luxurious watches for the wealthy people of the world, that you're going to make a fortune out of it. And it's just,
look.
If you're in it for that, then you're in it for the wrong reasons. Same as music, right?
Yeah.
It don't work. If it comes, it comes. But it's not.
It's possible. I think it's totally, totally possible for musicians who go into bands. Some of them are going to be mega rock stars and millionaire. Same with watchmaking, like Voutilainen and also yourself, Dan. That's always possible, I think. But as a teacher, no, you can't be a rock star teacher. It's I have devoted my life, and this is important to me. And I have to be lucky, to earn as much as a bartender in a normal bar in Switzerland, because that's my way to subsidize, to take out the absolute minimum salary, because my students are paying me my salary. So I don't take out anything. I can't live in a mansion. I can't have an expensive car. My car was actually donated to me because I had a bicycle when I started the school. Mm. So I spend zero money on anything outside of watchmaking. All my money is spent into the school or watch projects.
That does not seem right to me. And people do things for all sorts of reasons, but there's an industry that is benefiting off the blood, sweat, tears, and the years of labor that you're putting into this. And for that industry just to let you do what you're doing and say, oh, Henrik, he's a great guy. We all love Henrik. It just does not. So I'm amazed to hear you say that, you know.
John, me and you have spoken about this at length. And I've spoken to other people, many other people, about this as well. Because there are collectors out there who are extremely affluent, and they love what we do and don't have that time to go to school. And they love to help. They do want to start grants. They do want to buy you a car. They do want to give you extra money. But I think we need to show the channels and where they're needed, and bring a light to that, so they do know where their money would be well spent. Obviously, your school, if anyone is watching this and you have that ability, certainly give Henrik a call and buy him another car.
I wish there was like a collectors union or something who had a foundation where they can, because I don't need the money. It's the student who need the money to enroll in the course and to be able to pay for their living. If somebody could help passionate students who cannot afford to go to a private school and cannot, they don't have a possibility to get the student loans in the country or something, then I wish there was this foundation that could, and there is. There actually is, but they don't help everybody. It's per selection. There must be a good story and so on. But I had one student who was actually 100% subsidized by not a foundation, a private retail store, and they guaranteed his employment when he passed the course. And that was a total success story. It was amazing.
I remember things like that from my WoStep days. There was a few students that way. Because people have to understand, if we do go to Switzerland to go to school, we have to pay our own living expenses. We have to pay for our own food. We need tools, right? And then if we're not going to go directly into a company thereafter, depending upon what we're going to do, we need our own personal tools thereafter. So it gets very, very expensive to enroll and go. There should be a foundation for your school. Same what I'm trying to do here shortly when I move to the next larger place, where I could take in a few American watchmakers traditionally trained, hopefully from your school, one at a time, and help them along their way to try to get a foundation for them, so when they leave here, they can perhaps have the money to get themselves an outfitted Shaolin 70 and the metal that they need, and know how to get it in this country where it's so impossible just to get or do you know, anything. And the learning curve never ends either. So it should continue on. If that person is per se going to start their own watchmaking independent brand or make their own watch on the side of their job, you know, perhaps this person buys their first watch and that's the funds that goes into it. Some kind of creative way where we can raise those kind of foundations.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely something that is essential. When I listen to this, I just think that the big brands, you mentioned a couple of your alumni have gone on to work for other big brands in other parts of the world. Most big brands are benefiting from the education that these young people got at the KNHWCC. And to me, nobody's guaranteed a free ride or anything they got there, and there's no easy paths in life,
when you have sheer determination, like for me, for what I'm building here, I would, for someone when they do come in, would have to sit with me, being that I'm not as good of a teacher, but I was an instructor for a while, and I'm not very good at it. I like to scream and yell and hit them with all kinds of sticks and throw my tweezers at them. They like pick their tweezers out of their shoulders and stuff. It's not clean enough. And again, like you said, Henry, working at Show Park taught me that too, the cleanliness factor. That's something that both of us learned firsthand that, oh boy, it's a whole nother level when we're working for someone like that. But I need someone that comes out of your school because I can relate. Yeah. The only way I can relate. And plus, shortly, just to show you, it's a never-ending learning curve. I'm bringing in Guilloche machines here, which I'm going to learn myself. Nice. Yeah, so I got a straight line and a Rose engine coming in here.
Is beyond my level. I never learned to use the Rose engine or the straight line. That's even beyond my level. But that's, of course, extremely cool.
Yeah. My OCD, I'm just going to shut down for like 3 months and just live it.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
It's the only way, no,
that's
right?
Extremely cool, yeah. Very well done.
My point is that'll be here for whoever works with me. They'll have that chance. Just here's the key, like school, right?
That's amazing, yeah.
In America.
Yeah, in America even. That's just insane, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do something here, bro. It's real challenging. Yeah.
It's a virgin.
Yeah, America need way more. I mean, you have 300 or 400 million people there. And how many independent? You should have 30, 40 independent watchmakers taking market share from the big corps.
Yeah, in my opinion.
I mean, it has to be like, you already have that with all the other craft beer. Mm-hmm. They are very successful, I believe.
Yes, very, and everywhere. Yeah.
I think the craft beer is a fantastic analogy because if we go back 100 years, for example, every town had its own brewery. So every town crafted its own beer. At the same time, if you walked, 100 meters up the road from that brewery, what was there? There was a watchmaker who was, manufacturing, creating watches in the old school way, the way that it's still being done. But those guys have all gone now. So the craft beer, I think the craft beer is a great analogy for independent industry as a whole, because I think it shows that there people are more aware of what goes on, and to smaller brands, the independents are a lot more attractive now. And
there's just too many problems here. Hopefully I can ease some of them because I'm going through the pain of getting the machines, because we can't just buy used Chablins here. They were used in other industries. They weren't really used in Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no Chablins. Everything has to be found in Switzerland or Germany or France or somewhere. And then one or two of them have to be brought in, then restored. And so it's not around the corner. Nothing is the same. You can't even get the right German silver here. It doesn't exist anywhere. You can't get any of the metallurgies we need. Nothing, basically. It's really a struggle for, and that's me, where I know what I need. It's a struggle across the board for me. I spend more time hunting for things online from all the different countries and trying to get the quantities that independent watchmakers need, which is impossible. You know, you call up and say, I'd like 10 of these. They won't even answer your email. They, you know, minimum quality. Minimum quantity is 5,000 of whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So it's a great difficulty. That's another area that I think our whole community as independents need to get together and solve a problem for all of us. You know, group buys of metal, or group buys of this, that, cutting tools. You know,
exactly.
How does someone like me, you know, hello, Louis Balea, I need a custom gear cutter. You speak French? You speak French? No. Oh. that's the bottom line, right? I was hunting for German silver, right? Trying to find a certain size of German silver, right? So I could cut it up. And so it's in Germany, right? So German silver, Germany. So I write them a big long email, whatever I need. I get one line back. Sorry, no send.
Yeah.
Welcome to America. Sorry, no send.
Yeah. you have to have those things in America already. I think it's only slow in the beginning, but then it goes, it's an accelerating trend. So maybe in the beginning you have to then, you know, check with other watchmakers, and maybe people have to also put, because we know as a watchmaker there are big egos everywhere, like with chefs and probably musicians as well. So we have to, during brief moments of time, we have to learn to put our egos aside, so that we can, as a group, grow and individually benefit as well. It's important that we have this thinking collaboration. Mm-hmm. We can't be just one man armies, even though that's what we are, but we can't be 100%. I didn't get here alone. Mm-hmm. I got help from 10 or 15 teachers and watchmakers to get to my point by collaboration. I would be dead if I didn't collaborate.
I totally agree.
Stephen McDonald, who is an absolute genius from 30 miles away from me now. I was speaking to him this morning on the phone, and I told him that I was going to be speaking to Henry Corpella tonight. And he said, "Whoa, I know Henry really well." And Stephen McDonald, most people have never heard of Stephen McDonald.
He's a secret guy.
He is secret. He lives, as I say, 30 miles from me here. And you know, people who live on his street don't know that he is one of the most celebrated watchmakers on the face of the earth. I'm sure you do know, Dan, but he reinvented the perpetual calendar for MD&F.
It's a total genius guy.
But you know, there's a lot of ghost builders. You know, we've talked about a few of them. Yeah. There's my friend Luke from Arts Mechanics. No, for 6 months I'm like, dude, you gotta go on Instagram, post something. No, I'm too busy. Make opinions for another brand. You know, you might have just mentioned them. There's plenty of ghost builders. We've all done it. I did it. There's ghost repairers too, right, Henry? The big companies they don't have someone to do certain complications. It's all farmed out. So if you are listening, it's bad, but it's good. So there is other businesses that we're explaining to you that even if you went to Henry's school and came out of school, there's ghost building, there's behind the scenes businesses where some people just make pinions and wheels, and they're so damn good at it because some of the larger companies, they're prototyping, right? So they can't set up their CNC machines and wheel making machines to make 10 pieces, to make 12 pieces, to try out what's going to work after it's in CAD. So these people, that's what their job is, and they love it. They love it. That's so special.
I think with MB&F, Max always ensures that they sign the movement, the guys. I think it's a really cool thing what he has done with the and friends part of it. Yes, I'm sure there are people, as in any walk of life, who don't get the credit for what they do. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people involved with that brand, with MB&F, they do get they get the kudos of having their photograph on that page on their website. It's a cool gang.
What about music? Let's talk about music for a second.
Music. So, yeah, listen, because of where you come from.
What do you listen to? What did you grow up on? And do you let your students, listen to music while they're working in school and so on and so forth?
So in Sweden, there is more this kind of Nordic countries have this tradition with harder music. And when I grew up, when I was early teenager, 13, 14 years old or something like that, I didn't really listen to any music. I was mainly annoyed about the pop music streaming out of the radio. What is that noise all the time? And then somebody or something got me introduced to something I never ever heard before, because they cannot put this on the radio. And it was this strange band called Black Sabbath, and it sounded very rude, like a horror movie, but for music. And then I realized, yeah, this is not irritating me. This is kind of more scaring me. This is like, oh, yeah. So before the watchmaking school, yeah, that was the only music. And then I went into that kind of music and also Judas Priest. Those were the two bands that I went into that, into the watchmaking school, where I realized that, oh, there are other people who like the same music. So we had two groups there. There was the techno guys was 50% of their class, and then it was the heavy metal guys 50%. And some specialized in Metallica, some in Kiss, and for me, I specialized at that time in the era of Black Sabbath. I think it was actually my mother who mentioned the name now when I think back on it.
Probably don't listen to this band, Black Sabbath.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
It's the devil's music.
Yeah.
Brilliant story. Brilliant.
That's just awesome.
Two classic bands.
I did see Anthrax everywhere, even though I didn't happen to specialize and listen to the music. I saw it, and I was always thinking, but we didn't have internet at that time. Mm-hmm. Only rich people had a computer. I saw Anthrax everywhere, sprayed on walls like Anthrax. Mm-hmm. And then one way or other, I found out, oh yeah, that's this really more tougher kind of band, because they even spray it in graffiti on walls like illegal. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I heard about it already when I was 13, 14 years old. Unless they were talking about the poison, but I don't think
no.
so.
No, not
it
back then.
In the band.
The poison really wasn't in the forefront way, way back then. We just played a lot in your country, in Stockholm and everywhere. All the time. Yeah.
We must have audiences. As Henrik says, in Sweden, the rock music is dark and heavy. Yeah. And I've been listening to Opeth today and over the last few weeks. So we dip in and out. I have this very, very strange taste in music, Dan, you know. But I do edge towards that hard rock side of things, like, you know. But I could be listening, as you said, to...
You got a good foundation, you know. If you got Sabbath and Priest in you. All you need more was a little more Iron Maiden, and you'd be all set, bro.
That was actually not my brother Kai, who is also a watchmaker, but a brother between my brother Kai and me. He only listened to Iron Maiden, and that's all he listened to. He had everything about Iron Maiden, and that's it. He just specializes in that. That was strange, but yeah.
He's a specialist.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. I tour with all three of those bands all the time, and just all wonderful people. And it just goes to show you that, you know, watchmakers, we listen to the best music that there is out there. All you posers out there, you're not good watchmakers if you're watchmaking and listening to any other music but metal.
You're only.
I'm kidding. Just don't bring it in my workshop.
Exactly.
Hey, Dan, you know what? We had Stefan Kudoke on last week, and his preference is for classical. So it takes all kinds, really, doesn't it? Like, you know, but there definitely does seem to be a lot of watch people who are into their their rock music.
I really found that fascinating. I didn't really know, you know. I mean, I know when I was in Wostep, and the gentleman I was telling you about, can't remember his name offhand, he was the head of all of A. Lang & Son, instructor for all the watchmakers, and came in for that chronograph course. And part of the chronograph course was whipping up a Breguet hairspring from nothing. And this guy was the fastest I've ever seen in my life. And he had like little headphones in. My desk was in the corner in the back. If you're the teacher, it's by the window in the corner in the back. And he looks up at me, he goes, "Black Sabbath, your brother Dave's bitch." And he goes back, and he's like done with the hairspring in like, you know, 2 minutes. I'm like, oh, we're in trouble now. we're in trouble. And so it is true. You know, wherever I went, there was metalheads, and it was really enlightening to see. I thought everybody would listen to like Barbra Streisand or something, you know.
I think it's really no. I noticed that it's with very, very old gentlemen, it could be like opera or classical music. But that's in complexity, I think, very similar to like heavy metal or this kind of music. Mm-hmm. And then when you see these people are clear metal heads that I see in these high complication departments, actually, and they have these earphones on and you can hear it's, you know, coming out something, and big beard and looking really like, and a lot of tattoos everywhere and so on. So these are many of these people are actually, for some strange reason, I don't know why, they're into this kind of, they want more out of music than just mainstream. I think there must be some more, I don't know. It's, for me, it's almost like a craving. Once in a while, I have to just blow out my brains with this music.
Yeah. So I think,
and it's like that. Yeah.
I just find it fascinating that most of the people that I see, they are complication people. So they are, you know, they could be working on a few different timepieces at once. Because as you know, we get stuck sometimes. We put it to the side to let our brain go away for a day or a week or a month, and it's sitting there, and they might have three or four of them. So they got a couple of repeaters all over their desk. And they're blasting Slayer. You know, it's like, for me, it doesn't compute, and I'm the guy that creates the music. I'm down there listening to like either nothing or like jazz. You know, I need like calm myself down, or I'm going to kill this watch.
I'm going to start winding this up here now, because your old friends released a video last night of U2. They did a U2 cover. I'm not sure if you know about this.
No.
So it was two of the guys out of Anthrax put together a cover of A City of Blinding Lights by U2. It sounds exactly like U2. I go, what is happening there? Like, you know, so they need a better kick up the ass, I think, man. So listen, folks, they've gone over the 1 hour 30 mark, which seems to be where we are now. It is. So I would just and before we go, Hendrik, once we close off here, don't go away. We'll say goodbye after I've hit the close down button. So you wait for a minute. So to everybody else who has joined us on In the Metal, we have had a fantastic conversation tonight with a guy. I swear, as I'm listening to this here, I feel that he is a guardian angel of watchmaking, where he has put his everything, including his life and his career, into the development and the nurturing and the cultivating of the next generation of talent that are going to, we'll all know their names in 10 years' time when they're doing their own watches and they've got fantastic Instagram accounts and their websites are leaping off the screen at you. And you know, it's because of what you're getting from this man here. And I just say, you know, people, this has been a really, really fascinating one. And Hendrik, I would actually say, I hope you'll come back and talk to us again sometime, because we're only scratching the surface of what you're doing there, you know.
Same thing for me. I just want to say that, you know, most of the people that do contact me, you know, your school is the dream. That's what they want, no matter what, somehow to get to. That is the word in the streets. That is the word in the underground. I know you're in your school and sometimes that kind of stuff doesn't get back to you. So what you're doing truly is making a difference, a huge difference. It's changing independent watchmaking and the next level and next breed I hope, of independent watchmaking and the way schools should be taught into the future. And we're also blessed to have you. We all do love you. We love what you do. We love what you're showing us. You're showing the world through the internet and all the avenues you have at your fingertips, what the proper machines are to be used, what the tooling is, what you're doing, the creativity that can come out of what we do as watchmakers. And man, we're all on board with you, and you're a blessing to all of us, man. And thank you for coming on the show as well.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you, Dan and Johnny also. And also, it's very important, these encouraging words, because it also makes me more willing to show more as well. But if you don't hear anything that people want to listen to this, then I just do it kind of to make myself known. But this, thanks a lot for this. And now I know I'm going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I will try to show more of the school and what we do here. And later on, also some of my own projects.
Fantastic.
We all can't wait. And for me, as soon as I'm able to travel, I can't wait to come over and have a beer with you.
For sure. We're going to be drinking a lot of beer, my man. listen, Henrik.
I'd show you my escapement.
yeah. Do you want to tell us about how you're getting on, my man? Absolutely.
This last few weeks have been dial side steel bridges. So after those, I have a few more hold down steel bridges on the dial side. And then we start a further pre-assembly and alignment, and then version two of the same parts.
Very cool.
Right. We will have to do a show about your watch some night.
I start gear and pinion making. Because a lot of my shafts, it's an offset gear train. So there's two cannon pinions and the great wheels on the other side. So I have a lot of through pinions through the plate that I have to manufacture and all the gears and pinions. So, you know, I can't wait. I love doing that. Firing up my sixes that I modified here for indexing, electronic indexing, which is really cool. I can't wait to show you.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Guys, listen, thank you so much. Everybody who has watched us tonight, everyone who continues to come back, and that little following that we have that's growing every week, every episode. I think, to me, it feels like we're doing something that's significant. We're shining a light into the recesses of independent watchmaking and bringing you guys to the fore. And if more people know your name and what you do because of this, that is what we are all about here on In the Metal. And listen, everybody, we're 1:37 here. Thanks so much for watching, everyone. We will see you again next week with another fantastic episode of In the Metal with myself and Dan and another guest. And thanks again, everyone, for watching. And hold on there a minute, Henrik.